And we wear that like a badge of honor. Like, I spent 4 days nonstop drinking an infinite number of Red Bulls to be able to get this thing back online, right? To be able to get it working.
Yeah.
And we're quite proud of that until you realize that, gee, that really isn't the best thing for your health. It's not particularly good for your relationships. And not
a good business practice either.
Generally not. You know, you usually don't want to go from firestorm to firestorm.
Welcome to Embracing Digital Transformation, where we investigate effective change leveraging people, process, and technology.
This is Darren Pulsford, Chief Solution Architect, author, and most importantly, your host.
On today's episode, Leveraging Failure in Leadership with special guest Dave Burrell. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
We've had a little bit of technical difficulties this afternoon, but hey, that's okay. I'm glad we're talking.
For two CIOs, we finally figured it out.
Yeah, exactly. where's our technical people? Where's our tech? We need technicians to help us. Because once you hit the C-suite, all the brain cells go away.
It's all over. Yeah, things. At that point, forget it. Yeah, you're lost.
So before we get started talking today, Dave, can you tell my audience a little bit about yourself, your background, how you got to where you're at right now? You have a similar background as me in a lot of respects.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. I'll try and keep it short, but I mean, I guess in the, you know, both of us being from California, it's kind of what a long, strange trip it's been. As an academic, realized that I didn't want to spend 8 years writing a dissertation. And abject poverty as a PhD student sucks. So I went to the Big Eight. At the time, Pricewaterhouse, got certified as a CPA, jumped to the consulting practice, and then got hooked on being an entrepreneur. Did three high-tech startups, joined the first one at just First Revenue, took them public. They were on Fortune's list of the 100 fastest-growing companies in the U.S. Left that about 4.5 years later when they were $275 million a year in revenue. Went and started my own consulting practice that turned into a software company that 11 years later we sold that to a publicly traded software company. Freelanced for a little bit, joined another startup before First Revenue, sold that to Western Digital in 2009. Then did a few more CIO engagements, did a roll up for Blackstone Private Equity where we bought about 40 companies and glued them all together. I just realized that the microphone had slipped through, so the sound might not have been that good. Sorry about that.
That's all right. We can fix that.
Yeah. Then wound up working as kind of an entrepreneur in residence and coach for a SaaS software company. And in the last few years, started researching for my own edification more than anything else, asking the ubiquitous question, how could so many smart people make such stupid mistakes when it came to running IT projects? Why in the name of God am I seeing the same failures over and over and over again? So that kind of led me to where I am today, which brings us to this conversation.
Yeah, so this is a really good conversation because I recently on the podcast had quite a few executives come on and talk about digital transformation and their journey. And we talk about all the success, right? How to get success. But today we're going to talk about failure a little bit and why we're seeing that. I think it's a fascinating, now you're also a software engineer
at one point in time. Yes. Written a lot of code, but it's been a long time since that happened.
I'll see. It's in my blood. I don't get paid to write code. I write code for fun. Which drives my wife a little crazy because if we're like on the beach, she's reading a book and I'm coding up a genetic algorithm or I'm playing with a large language model and coding. And she's like, aren't you where you're supposed to be on vacation? You should be, you know, I'm having a blast.
It's
I do
funny.
Exactly what I want to do.
It's really funny because, you know, when I started the software company, I was kind of a co-equal creator, programmer, engineer, and architect of the application with one primary partner. But as time got on, I realized that when you start actually raising money with investors and you're pitching on Sand Hill Road, you can't do that. You know, you have to completely change your mindset. So you go from digits, you know, from, you literally go from code to communicating with human beings. And it's a very different sort of mindset, right? Because you have to interpret what the coders are trying to do. So I became the liaison between my PhDs and master's degrees that were coding the application and the people that I was trying to explain to them what it was all about.
That's a very different skill set.
Yeah, it really was. And you can't, it's tough to go back. You know, it's really tough to go back.
It's in my blood.
It's fun. It was like woodworking to me. It was literally like carpentering. I had people saying, "You hum when you do it." You know, I mean, it's just, it was fun. But, you know, alas, those days are, if you don't keep it up, you'll lose it pretty fast.
It moves very fast.
It's a perishable skill.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. So let's talk about your years of experience in running businesses and CIOs. And I love how you said, I've seen a lot of failure. And I've talked to a lot of people that have failed, right? I mean, you've experienced it probably firsthand. I know I have projects that failed. And you're like, what happened here? You've actually done some research in this and observed, you know, what's happened. So
invariably, and this was a process of pattern recognition over probably 20 years. So I wish I could say that I'm astute, but I'm not. But after I've seen something 200 or 300 times, even I begin to detect the pattern, right? And I think I shared a story with you the other day, and I'll kind of repeat it again because I think that kind of tees it up. I had been introduced to the CEO of a multi-billion-dollar-a-year mortgage operation. Not going to identify who it was, but it was a known bank that everybody in the world would know about. And they spent 18 months and a couple $1 million trying to put in place a reporting package and a data warehouse. And they had nothing to show for it. And a friend of mine put me in touch with this guy, and we had lunch one day, and he was kind of explaining to me what was going on. The CEO was finally getting involved because nothing was getting done, and he wanted to intervene. And after he explained it to me, I said, let me just ask you some questions to try and understand what's going on. And I looked at him and said, so did you guys ever figure out the business questions you were trying to answer? And he looked at me with the condescending look that only a very sophisticated CEO can muster. That, what type of an idiot are you, right? Like, why are you asking me that question? In my entire career, nobody has ever brought that up. I've never heard that question before. I said, well, this is a reporting exercise, right? He said, yeah. I said, well, the only reason to write a report is to answer a business question. If you don't have a question to answer, don't waste your time writing a report. Oh, I never thought of it like that. I said, well, where'd you guys start? He said, well, we got a couple of PhDs working on this, and they said we needed to get all of the data for the organization together and cleaned up and put in one spot. And I said, no, you need all the data that you need to answer those questions cleaned up and put in one spot. Oh, well, did you guys figure out the business processes you were trying to analyze? No. What do you mean? Well, you know, business is pretty simple. It's about moving a ball from point A to point B as fast as you can to try and make a profit, right? Yeah, well, if you don't understand the process that you're trying to evaluate, how are you going to evaluate it? Oh, okay, never thought of it like that. You know, and this went on for an hour, you know, all of these basic questions. This is not a dumb guy, you know, by any stretch of the imagination, an incredibly accomplished individual. And you got to the end of about an hour and a half, and I'm only slightly vindictive. And yeah, I look back at him and said, so let me get this straight. You guys fired a $2 million cruise missile. Nobody ever bothered to define the target. And now you're wondering why you didn't hit it? And he kind of looks back at me sheepishly and said, well, yeah, when you put it that way. Yeah, that's exactly what we did. And I mean, I could give you scores of stories like that.
So was it the fact that they didn't know the requirements up front?
They never thought them through. We lead with the technology. We had this knee-jerk response. The technology is going to solve all of our problems, and it won't. Yeah. These are, we we label them IT projects. They are not IT projects. They are business projects that just happen to be enabled by technology.
By technology. That goes to the motto of my show, people, process, and technology. Notice technology is last.
Right. It should be, but we always jump the line and make it first.
We always do technology, people, and then maybe process if we get around to it.
We ignore process, and yet that's the totality of what this is all about.
Interesting.
We forget that there are only two types of software. You either automate the execution of a process that would otherwise be done manually, or you report on the performance of one. At the most fundamental level, that's it. There aren't other types
of
software.
Of it that way.
Yeah, I mean, most people, I can't tell you the number of, if for some reason, it's always MIT professors that go, oh my God, you're right. I never thought of it like that before. But, you know,
but well,
that's all it
you
is.
You just boiled my hobby down into something boring.
But it's not boring. It's exciting because once you understand the basics, right, then everything else becomes a lot easier.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah. But I like what you said. I'm automating a process.
Or reporting on the performance of one.
Reporting on the performance. Yeah. Hey, you're right.
I mean, that's it.
That's it.
And if you can get that straight, then it kind of opens it up to take it to the next level. So people also don't think about the fact that there's only four work roles in any organization. And you know them, but you never think about it.
Okay, let's hear them.
Well, workers who actually do the work, the frontline workers.
Frontline worker, okay.
There's the managers that schedule, coordinate, train, manage the workers. The data that comes out of that first half of the execution life cycle gets flipped to an analyst who tries to assess what's going on and figure out what's happening, who then delivers those reports dutifully to an executive whose job it is to refine the process going forward so you can do better the next time. Whether you're a one-man shop or, you know, the biggest corporation on the planet, you've still got those four roles. And if you understand that, you can use that as kind of a jig or a template or a model. Or my wife just made me a birthday cake the other day. And it would have been hopeless without the cake frame, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, anybody who's ever done woodworking or made a dress or, you know, pottery or, you know, a whole host of other things has worked with some frame or a model or a die or a jig or, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, right? A pattern, right?
But when you see that pattern, once you see that pattern, and I'm not pretending that I got this quickly, right? I want to make it very clear I did not.
Mm-hmm. For those of you who can't see Dave and I have hair color.
Yeah, we're gray. You know, we're old, baby. Not maybe 1 foot in the grave. I mean, but
white hair comes from wisdom. That's exactly. It's not age. It's wisdom.
And abuse. Don't forget the abuse. We've earned those scars on our back.
Yes,
right?
We have.
We've earned those scars on our back. You know, I guess actually that's one of the reasons why I'm kind of hell-bent on pursuing this work now, because you look at all the people. You know, you and I did not talk about this before, but I buried 11 colleagues before they made it to 60.
Oh,
and half of them died of deep vein thromboses, so blood clots that broke loose. Now, think about all of the hours that you've spent sitting behind a terminal trying to fix a critical bug because the system had to go live.
I've been there.
Right? I mean, we all have. And we wear that like a badge of honor. Like, I spent 4 days nonstop drinking an infinite number of Red Bulls to be able to get this thing back online, right? To be able
to get
it working.
Yeah.
And we're quite proud of that until you realize that, gee, that really isn't the best thing for your health. It's not particularly good for your relationships. And not
a good business practice either.
Generally not. You know, you usually don't want to go from firestorm to firestorm.
Understanding the requirements, understanding the fundamental roles. is critical, because now I can start really understanding the requirements instead of these ancillary, nice to have type of things that really don't matter.
Right.
Because ultimately, like you said, I'm automating a process or reporting on the progress.
Well, yeah, reporting on the performance of a process. Yeah.
Of a process, right.
There's. Go ahead.
No, I just find it fascinating. If you simplify it, then that means when I'm gathering requirements, I can simplify the way that I gather the requirements.
Absolutely. And yeah, there's sort of an additional dimension to this that I only really discovered in about the last 3-4 years. And it's not just that it's new to me, it's that it's new to science. You know, for 5,000 years, from the dawn of time, we thought that we were masters of our own mental domain, right? To paraphrase Jerry Seinfeld, right? We thought that we were able to control what we remembered and what we said and did.
And well, that's what we're taught in school, right? We're taught.
Exactly. And yeah. Everybody expects it, right? So how many times have you seen some enterprise IT project going on? And I shouldn't even be calling that. I should be a tech-enabled business project. But how many, but just for a common parlance, how many times have you seen people not get the requirements right or somebody miss something?
And almost there's every single time.
Almost every time. And there's a blowback that happens that says, those people are stupid, they're lazy, they're incompetent, they're malicious. We had an acronym at Price Waterhouse called slime balls, right? I mean, that basically captured the idea. But we always assumed malice or incompetence. And the reality is that's not it at all. That's how humans communicate. And it's really only about the last 20 years we've come to understand that. And one of the greatest ironies of all time, particularly for our industry, is that the very first thing we do, the very first thing the vendor asks for is, I want to talk to the subject matter expert. I want to speak to the SME, right? Because the idea is SME is like going up the mountain to the oracle.
Right, yeah. They know everything. Right?
They know everything. They're going to be able to tell me everything I need to know about this process. So you sit down with the SME, never realizing that all the SME remembers about their entire process is maybe 5 to 7 things. They have a very high-level summarized story. What we didn't know until really about the last 15 years is that the more of an expert you become, the more detail you internalize, and the more you forget. So there's actually, when we were in school, we were all taught that the human brain is fixed, that you were born with all of the brain cells you're ever going to get, right?
Right.
For those of us that came of age at a certain time in the 70s, you know, we used to joke about the fact that, well, after a Saturday night, you know, there's another 20 million brain cells shot, right? Right.
Jokes.
Yeah. I mean, we was like, you know, you woke up at, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, another 10 million gone, right? We didn't realize that not only does the brain regenerate, but it rewires itself continually over the course of our lives. And the brain's a computer that fundamentally works on power processing and storage. And those are finite resources for a human brain, much like they are in a server farm, right? So when we learn something for the first time, you've got a piano behind you, I've got guitars behind me. When we were first learning to play those instruments, we spent an enormous amount of time thinking about where we needed to put our fingers and what we needed to do and how we knew move next.
Right. Yeah.
That sucks up a tremendous amount of power processing and storage. So there's an autopilot that all humans have that, again, we didn't realize existed. You know, like 97% of everything our brain does is unconscious to us. It's hidden. So that autopilot is watching your utilization of resources and realizes that, you know, Dave and Darren are spending an awful lot of time repeatedly trying to master this instrument. So I'm going to transfer the processing of that from the prefrontal cortex, which is the part of your brain right behind your forehead, down to the lowest level of your brain at your brainstem, your cerebellum and your basal ganglia. And it literally lays down dedicated circuits on a chip so that you can do that task infinitely faster without thinking about it. That's the good
but
news.
But I don't have the details anymore in my head. I see where you're going with this.
Because the autopilot flushes your RAM cache after it's done it, after it's made the transfer, and it's wiped it out, and you can't respond to it.
Because it's highly efficient. It's your brain's highly efficient that way, right?
Much more so than we ever dreamed.
I don't need to think about it. I know how to do that. It's on autopilot.
If you ever want to screw up a tennis player that you're trying to beat, say, my God, how did you hit that serve? Make them think about it, and it'll destroy them. A golfer. How did you do that? You know, then you start trying to reverse engineer it, and you're lost. I was watching a clip of it wasn't Jimmy Kimmel. It was Fallon, Jimmy Fallon, with Keith Richards about 2 weeks ago. You know, and Keith Richards had this basic acoustic guitar, and he was able to get sounds out of it that I was like, where was that coming from? And Jimmy Fallon was obviously flabbergasted by it. And when Richards finished, he goes, how did you get that sound out of that guitar? And Richards just looks at me and goes, I have no idea.
So what you're saying for the SME, the subject matter expert, it's the same thing. You bring them in, and if you want to know details, they can't tell you.
They can't tell you. You have to ask them the right questions to get them moving around their own mental models so that they're able to kind of unearth for you or rediscover on their own what it is that they actually do. Did you ever see the movie Sully about the miracle on the Hudson?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I saw that.
Tom Hanks' film, right? I mean, you know Sully Sullenberger. Everybody knows that story,
yeah,
right?
Everyone, yeah.
So it was a wonderful illustration of this phenomenon, but they didn't really fully unpack it in the movie. So they have a bird strike. They lose both engines right after takeoff.
Right.
Sully immediately takes over the plane. It was the co-pilot that was flying. The very first thing he does is reach up and he turns on the auxiliary power unit, the APU, which is number 17 in the checklist. But Sully did that number one. Now, obviously it was successful. He landed the plane in the middle of the Hudson. Everybody survived. It was an absolute miracle that this happened. Now, this guy's life is on the line. His financial career, his future is on the line. And for months, he can't explain to anybody why he did what he did. But it was only after Airbus and the FAA ran repeated simulations with multiple crews that they realized, my God, the guy did everything perfectly. And if he would have followed the checklist, he would have killed everybody on board. Wow. It took months for him to unpack what it was that he'd actually done to have a perfect result.
Because of his experience, he was a SME.
He'd internalized everything.
Thanks, Dave, for your valuable insight. Stay tuned to next episode where we hear the rest of this interview with Dave Burrell. Thank you for listening to Embracing Digital Transformation today. If you enjoyed our podcast, give it 5 stars on your favorite podcasting site or YouTube channel. You can find out more information about Embracing Digital Transformation at embracingdigital.org. Until next time, go out and embrace the digital revolution.